Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Sam Toma. Sam, how are you doing?
Happy to be back for a new series, but after finishing up the look pack, we're kind of switching gears here. Happy to be back to kick off and talk about the best players in all of franchise history over all the eras and just kind of almost put the end cap on the whole look pack discussion.
Cap on the pack. That's a beautiful way to put it. Seems like we've gone through all these eras. Now it makes sense to compare them all. And what is the ultimate Packers team? And joining us is a first-time guest on this show, although a member of Full Press Coverage Packers for some time now. One of our writers doing some great work right now. Everyone, please welcome Jesse Hall. Jesse, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. First time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate that. Right now, Jesse's been putting out some really key articles. His key 2020 matchup series, looking at different players at different positions, lining up, in one-on-one matchup situations later on in the season. So already... five articles out now. I guess technically one of them is, I suppose, obsolete a little, but still great quality work nonetheless.
I appreciate it. Yeah, one fell through already, but hopefully no more. So,
breaking news, not so breaking at this point, but news to talk about, discuss specifically involving the Packers. I guess we're recording this on July 29th, so this is before the opt-out date for players not willing to risk health and family health for over fears of COVID-19 and other health concerns. So, right now, only Devin Funchess, wide receiver, has opted out. There could be more Packers after this, unfortunately. If we need to do other episodes, if there's, we'll get to that later. But as of right now, it's just Devin Funchess. So before we get to our all Packers team, just a quick touch on, first off, I guess the news of Funchess. There's not much news there. He's opting out. I mean, there's not much else to say, but just more the reaction of it and how this affects the Packers wide receiver core going forward.
It'll be interesting to see. Because I know I definitely wasn't in this camp of thinking that he would be a real notable contributor, but I know that many Packer fans and pundits and analysts, etc., were hopeful, at the very least, that he'd be able to fill a role as wide receiver 3, maybe even wide receiver 2, a position of obvious need after how difficult it was to fill that hole last season. Like I said, I wasn't hopeful of that, but considering how widespread that belief was, it's important to know that now, even more than before, the pressure falls on the shoulders of guys like Alan Lazard and Marquez Valdes-Scantling to continue moving forward, and Equanimee St. Brown to come back after a season cut short by injury, and come back and take big strides forward for a team that, I mean, they were in the NFC Championship last season, so they have to have Super Bowl aspirations while Rodgers is still on the team and still playing well, which obviously he is. So it's even more than before, we're counting on the young guys, the guys on rookie contracts, the guys who are still trying to prove themselves to take massive strides forward and be able to be solid to spectacular even contributors. And on the other side of the coin works, we'll be counting even more on Devontae Adams as if that were possible, just in terms of opening up the passing game, as well as trying to get Jay Sternberger, maybe Josiah DeGara as tight end. It's yet to be seen how he's going to be implemented into the offense, but it's going to take a village. It was going to, regardless of Devin Funchess being there or not, but since so many people were hoping that he'd be the wide receiver too, it's definitely worth noting that pretty much the only notable addition of any kind that the Packers front office made to their receiving core is no longer going to be a part of the receiving core.
I disagree, but okay. Just that he's the only notable one, but maybe my CFL aspirations are a little too high. Jesse, what do you think about all this?
agree with a lot of what Sam was saying there. I would have liked to see what Funchess could have brought. We didn't get to see him last year, obviously, but I think he had a place. But now that we kind of lost him to the year, Alan Lazard, I think, can still make another step forward. So I don't think it's a huge loss. I also like Reggie Bigleton, too. So I'm not going to say he was the only one that was, you know, added. St. Brown, I'm really high on. I think all the talent and skills there. So I agree with it. It's going to take a village. But I think it also opens up the door. There's also, you know, Tyler Gabriel, I think, would be a good option to bring in, too, because it's a different kind of body we don't have. So it kind of opens up the door still to bring in a free agent, you know, in camp or down the road. So while we did lose him, I don't think it's the end of the world, per se.
That was a good point. Just, you know, maybe this isn't done yet in terms of this receiving corps. Maybe there is a free agent out there that will get signed because of this. So, so keep your eyes peeled. Full press coverage. We'll try and stay on top of all the news regarding the Packers. Really happy you mentioned Bangleton. Actually, I want to circle back to Sam's point, talk about the tight ends. I wonder if Robert Tonyan actually takes a step up in terms of just getting a consistent week-to-week target share. Maybe he becomes just it seems like he's always been, you know, when injuries hit, if they need that extra speed aspect, they'll use it, from Robert Tonyan's point of view as a tight end. So maybe that just becomes a more consistent part of the offense. Maybe it's not Sternberger that becomes an every snap tight end. Maybe it's a split and Tonyan, they like his speed, his ability to stretch the field from over the middle. So certainly I think get a little bit of a different skill set. Like you said, Jesse, someone like Taylor Gabriel, just a quick twitch, sort of can get open deep, easy separator. That's the type of receiver they need. And I mean, as great as Funchess has been at times in his career, maybe great's overselling it. But as good as he's been in his career, it's a very similar body type and receiver type to what they've already got. He reminds me a lot of Alan Lazard, although I think Alan Lazard showed last year a bit easier ability to get open and separate more than Funchess had shown at any point in his career. So just thinking him at best, I thought Funchess might be a guy that catches maybe only 30 passes, but 5, 6, 7, 8 touchdowns, a red zone type of weapon. So that speaks towards the tight ends again. So yeah, I like Sternberger. I like Tonyan though. I want to keep mentioning Robert Tonyan. I think I have him on a dynasty league, and I may be more wishing that into existence than anything.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Tonyan too. I mean, he did come in as a receiver, so he was still transitioning to the position. It's year three. Receivers year three, hopefully they make the jump. So St. Brown this year, hopefully MVS can come back and, you know, show something. So yeah, it's going to take a village. I agree.
Yeah. And again, before this, I had been thinking the entire offseason Alan Lazard was the number two. This affects nothing, I think. It probably only solidifies that. And again, it solidifies Reggie Bangleton making the team, so good to see that. I had to mention it. Glad that Jesse mentioned it, though. Now, are there any other... I haven't heard anything else. Have I missed something? Is there another Packer that's been mentioned on a COVID list or has opted out?
I haven't seen anybody else.
Yeah, neither have I.
Okay, so that makes me feel smart. at least well-informed. We'll let the listeners decide if I'm smart or not. But okay, so all Packers team time. So the way I want to go through this, well, everyone wants to know the quarterback, right? But sorry, folks, we're going to make you wait till the end. We're starting on defense, good old boring defense. But it's such an integral part, and we've been through the Look Pack series, how through all the great Packers championships, there are always great offenses, but equally talented and impressive defenses along with them every step of the way. Complimentary football, that's what wins championships. So while we could look at 2011 and think, oh man, that Rodgers MVP season, how amazing that was. That defense was so bad. It did not deserve to win a title with that defense. And obviously lost their first playoff game. Sorry, bad memories again, right? This is supposed to be the all Packers team. That only good memories, only good players. So
supposed to be serotonin only. Come on.
Okay. So, okay, we got past the... I'm sorry for a 2011 reference, everyone, but we got past that for now. So looking at the all defense here, actually throughout this team, all three of us are pretty unanimous on certain position groups, actually. So you know what? Let's start with the position group where we're entirely unanimous. So we went with a standard four-man secondary, two corners, two safeties, and all three of us had the same four players. Charles Woodson and Herb Adderley on the outside, Leroy Butler, Willie Wood at safety. I guess the question none of us really addressed, free strong safety. Are we thinking more like modern Packers where we'd expect Willie Wood and Butler could both play both roles, or is there one that's more clearly the strong safety, one more clearly would put as the free safety?
I suppose I think they're both, obviously they're both Hall of Famers. Cough, Hall of Fame, put Leroy Butler in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. But they're both Hall of Fame caliber players who can play effectively in coverage or up by the line. So I think it's almost a modern type of defense situation where you could rotate them, flip-flop them, put them in different locations, always keeping the offense on their toes and uncomfortable. I think that'd be probably the most effective way to use them rather than trying to stick them in a positional box.
Yeah, no argument here. I think they're pretty interchangeable. They can do it all. Like you said, they're both Hall of Famers, or should be Hall of Famers. So they can interchange. They can come down the box. They can play single high. Both are studs. So no argument.
Yeah, and I didn't know that it was particularly close. I mean, even at corner, who is the next best corner, really? I mean, Tremont Williams played so long. Is it him?
Maybe. Considering especially the role he played in the Super Bowl run in 2010 and how effective he was for that stretch when they were so dominant as a defense. Maybe.
Good question. Al Harris, maybe? Al Harris played a long time. He did a lot of dirty work, even though it didn't jump out on the stat sheet all the time. I think it's these two are, Woodson and Adderley, and then it's a big gap, and then fill in the blanks is next.
I think if you specifically had to put a fifth corner in, someone to be a slot corner, I think Tremont Williams proved last year he was one of the best slot corners in the league after not really having played much of that role in his career, so really easily adjusted there. So I think that's probably how you'd play it. But yeah, I think it was very clearly Woodson before you even filled out the list. You knew Woodson was going to be there, and then Adderley also incredibly, obvious. I mean, he was such a key part of all five of those Lombardi championships. Their first year winning the title, he was a rookie that year, and rookie played directly from the get-go. I think on those 61-62 Packers teams, there might have been a grand total of 8 rookies, like both years, like 4-4-4, something like that, or 4-3. Like it was tough to as a rookie to make those rosters. And Herb Adderley came out of the bat and was the number one corner right from the start. So I think pretty obvious there. I guess we'll move backwards or closer to the line from there in terms of linebacking core. So this is where we start to differ. You both chose a 4-3 defense, I guess maybe more calling back to the, the Lombardi era Packers, whereas I'm going more with the modern. I really am going with the modern Packers defense. That's, the interchangeable safeties, the 3-4 front. And by doing that, I was able to add an extra linebacker This was tough because it was deciding where to, which position to go on. I remember, Sam, when you and I did our Packers All-Decade team, it was kind of that same argument of, linebacker, defensive end, those lines were kind of blurred a little bit. Something obvious here, all three of us had Clay Matthews, Ray Nitschke, and Dave Robinson. And I think Ray Nitschke gives you the, prototypical middle linebacker. Clay Matthews is a very prototypical modern outside pass-rushing linebacker, and Dave Robinson kind of played both roles. Always more of an inside linebacker, wasn't the middle until later in his career, so kind of moved around a bit. And then I also added Cal Hubbard, who played in the Lambeau era. So we're talking, he played with the Packers from, I think, 29, that first championship was that year with them, all the way to 35, actually, was when his final season. And Cal Hubbard has been on every NFL anniversary team, the 50th, the 75th, and now the 100th. Widely accepted as one of the best two-way players of the game. Played more tackle, offensive lineman, tackle guard. Those lines were a little blurred back then. Apparently was able to play end a little bit as well. Settled into what became now known as a linebacker more. More of a defensive tackle playing behind the line. So just seemed, all of his great play, he made the 20s All-Decade team, helped the Packers to that original three-peat. I wanted to represent him, and the way to get him on, I thought about putting him on the offensive line. Okay, and we'll get to that maybe later if counting him as an offensive tackle or not. And I guess here I just decided to put him on at the expense of an extra defensive tackle. which you both went with two defensive tackles. So that's really where the difference was made. I thought Cal Hubbard is an all-time great, one of the true pioneers of the game. So I decided to put him on there on defense, linebacker. I think, and you know, I kind of balanced it because there's another 60-minute offensive defensive front player that I put on the offensive side. So I figured balance. I got one on defense, one on offense. Maybe there's some good vibes there.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, I have no problem with it. Hey, anytime you can give some respect to the really old eras, throw it out there. The reason why I went with the three, I could have went 3-4, 4-3, like you're saying. At the same time, I went with these three because I think there might be the most fitting. When I made my team, I kind of look at, you know, if I'm putting a team together, it's kind of the now. And like Dave Robinson was a tremendous athlete. I mean, this guy had 27 picks as a linebacker. I think that's crazy. And he rushed the passer too. So he did everything, you know. And then you have, like you said, Nitschke in the middle, who's just, you want that hard nose guy that's going to punch you in the mouth every week. He's your guy. And Clay in his prime, I mean, him coming off the edge, it was hard to beat. I mean, he was a great, you know. Then, you know, there's mixed feelings for me when we moved him inside. Yeah, our defense got better. Is he an inside linebacker? I don't think so, but how do you leave him off?
Yeah, I feel pretty much the same way. My reasoning for individually going with the 4-3 is I wanted to get two D tackles on there, and I felt like overall linebacker historically even isn't as deep of a position group for the Packers as a franchise as the defensive line. There are several all-time great defensive linemen that I feel could have made this list. So just have by benefit of it being a deeper position group, in my opinion, that was kind of what led me to making it a 4-3 instead of a 3-4 setup. But I have absolutely no arguments to make with the Matthews, Nitschke, Robinson lineup as, for all the reasons you guys have mentioned. Just exceptional players, I think all, if not in the Hall of Fame already, should be in the Hall of Fame. Packers Hall of Fame, obviously, just because of the massive impact they had and the success, the team success that they helped bring at their respective eras. I mean, they're all-time great players.
Yeah, and I think, again, reason all three of us had them on. This is another one where I was looking at their linebackers, and no one else really stood out to me, again, other than Cal Hubbard, right? But those three really did seem like in a class of their own. It was like, hey, I was like, man, I really, really love watching Clay Matthews, and he was so great, but is he really going to stand all time? And honestly, probably, yeah. I mean, you know, certainly one of the best pure pass rushers the Packers has ever seen. So, yeah, I think that definitely has to count.
I agree. I think the two hardest positions were linebackers and tight ends for me. I know I'm jumping the gun a little, but they were, I think, the biggest drop-off where, like, you see these guys, you're like, who would be next? And I was thinking, I'm like, you know, Ted Hendricks, he played for us, what, a season? You know, granted, he had like 7 block kicks that year, but there was such a big drop-off that those are the four and that's it, you know.
Okay, so we'll move, I guess, forward towards the line now. So on the defensive line, again, so you both went with a 4-3 setup. All of us had Reggie White and Willie Davis as defensive ends, and all three of us had Henry Jordan as defensive tackle. So the only difference was... me no you know, Henry Jordan, I'm playing him more as a nose tackle. So before getting to your two players, do you think Henry Jordan would be able to play nose tackle, or is that really a mistake that I'm kind of making where this really should be a 4-3?
I don't think so. I mean, he was 6'2", 248 pounds. That's not going to fly today. So that was one of the reasons why, you know, with the 4-3, that's why I went that way. And plus, like Sam said, you know, you got the two all universe DNs. So that's how I felt about it.
Yeah, true. I guess that's where, yeah, I guess that does make sense. I am kind of seeing a bit of the flaw again. I just really wanted to get Cal Hubbard in, but well, you'll have to forgive me, folks. Sorry. So Henry Jordan, we all think he's pretty extraordinary. You know, maybe he goes down as the best defensive tackle in Packers history. Maybe not. Maybe someone else passes him. But you both disagree on the other defensive tackle he's playing next to. So, Sam, you have Gilbert Brown. So I'll let you make your argument on why you chose him.
Big old Gilbert Brown. I chose Gilbert Brown because, I mean, not only is he just a massive human being, and he was a massive part of the exceptional defenses of the late 90s, mid to late 90s. And that, of course, won a Super Bowl and went back to another the following year and could have won more. He was just an extremely solid presence. You can and formed a fearsome tandem with Reggie White for many of those years. Santana Dotson was on that line as well. Just an exceptional defensive line, like I alluded to earlier, one of the best in arguably NFL history in and of itself. And he was a key part of that because while he wasn't going to be necessarily pressuring the passer on any given down, you played it alongside freaking Reggie White. That's not really your biggest concern as a defensive lineman when you have the best pass rusher in NFL history, the most prolific pass rusher in NFL history playing alongside you. So the way he was able to complement Reggie White and be just an exceptional run stuffer and just really force the offense to consider him in terms of run defense almost as much as considering Reggie White or Leroy Butler in pass defense. That's where I think he shined. That's where I think he was most exceptional. And it helped make those defenses as great as they were. He was a key part in that, and I think that deserves a nod.
I mean, key part of that specific 96 season, he had 51 tackles that year, which was his career high. So, yeah, clearly a pure run stuffer when we talk about it. And 7 career sacks, so that was, again, that was never going to be the thing. From a defensive tackle standpoint of view, you're not necessarily looking for sacks. If you get it, that's a great bonus. You know, pressures, QB hits, and, you know, how many double teams a player kind of forces and commands, really, those are the things you want to see, so... Yeah, I think he fits the nod there for sure.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I love Gilbert Brown. Like, it was a toss-up for me. You could put me next to Reggie White and we'd still have a good D-line, and that's not saying I'm a good football player. But so the reason why I love Kenny Clark, everything that you're saying that Gilbert does, Kenny Clark can do, and he gets after the quarterback. He sees double teams every game, all game long. The kid, I think, is if he takes another step, the sky's the limit. So yeah, I guess a little bit projection for me. And again, I love Gilbert Brown. Don't get me wrong. I've been looking for a Gilbert Brown Gravedigger t-shirt for like 2 years. I can't find one, but I just think Kenny Clark has all of that and more. He can get after the quarterback. He can stop the run. You know, he's playing in a different front. So but he could play in both fronts, and the kid's young yet too. So a little bit of projection, nothing against Gilbert, but I just think Kenny Clark's the better football player.
Yeah, and if I was, okay, let's say I'm not going to take Cal Hubbard and was forced to move to that 4-3, I think I would go with Kenny Clark, simply that extra dimension as a pass rusher. And frankly, I get, these last couple years, I've gotten so excited just watching him. I've never been more excited watching a defensive tackle or a nose tackle in my life. It's truly astounding. Really hoping they get that extension done. We were waiting. Sam and I were talking about this as far back as February. When's that Kenny Clark extension coming?
Any day now, right?
Get it done.
Yeah.
Everybody else.
Yeah. And that's true. Now that the season is moving forward, maybe there's a bit more clarity. Maybe that helps move things along, because we did hear, it seemed positive news early on in February, March around the draft, and then it just radio silence, nothing. And I think part of it was, again, teams trying to figure out what would happen this year. So if everything goes forward with this season, you got to think the Packers are really going to want to get him locked in before things change any further. Because it's not like they don't have to, you know, play with pay another really key, important franchise player who's also a pending free agent. Different position, different side of the football. And we'll actually get to that side of the football right now on offense. We'll actually specifically talk about that position, that left tackle spot. So the easy transition here is to talk about Cal Hubbard again. So Sam, you had Cal Hubbard as your offensive tackle.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, he's listed among the greats of that era because he was so exceptionally good on both sides of the football. I think that most people, a lot of the people who would actually look back that far, like NFL historians and people who really study the game, note Cal Hubbard as one of the tackles that revolutionized the position and just one of the best all-around tackles. Like you said, like you alluded to earlier, the lines in between specific offensive line positions were kind of blurred, but Cal Hubbard helped to start putting those lines in the sand about what different responsibilities belonged to which specific position on the offensive line, because he was so exceptional on the edge of that offensive line as playing more of a tackle role. He helped make the position kind of what it is today. And a lot of people look back at him as really the first great tackle and still one of the greatest offensive tackles in the NFL, in NFL history. So I felt it fitting to as you saw, felt fitting to add him to the defensive side of the ball. I felt it fitting to add him to the offensive side of the ball here at the tackle position for the all-time team.
And was he one of the first, because again, noted that he played some end, right? Which is, again, more what we see now, think of more as what receivers were then, on the edge of lines, I guess, more of a tight end. So getting out in space and blocking in space, was he one of the first to really excel at that, I wonder?
Yeah, I mean, from what I'm reading, there were some alongside with him that were making similar, like, they were evolving as a tackle group, just making the game, making the position more modernized and more what we have expected from the position in the last like 30, 40 years. But he's recognized as essentially the biggest proponent of just making the revolutionizing and modernizing the position to what we know it as today.
So you went with the innovator. Jesse and I went with maybe one of the ones who's perfected that technique now. This is the opposite side of that coin. The Packers need to extend Kenny Clark. Another pending free agent at the end of the 2020 season is David Bakhtiari at left tackle. So, Jesse, I'll let you have the floor here. Why did you choose David Bakhtiari?
Well, after listening to Sam, I kind of feel bad that I took him now. This is one position, the offensive line, the Green Bay Packers have had riches. So there's nobody wrong with any of these players, because I think this is one of our best areas. But I went with Bach just because, yeah, the guy's a perfectionist. I mean, with all the other guys that are good in the league, he continues to be like the staple of pass protection. The guy's just, he's a stud. You line up the best pass rushers against him and he can be on an island and we can trust him. And yeah, I guess it's, you know, the latest that I've seen. So you tend to forget, you know, because it's, you know, a show me now kind of league. But nobody does it better right now in my book. And like Chad Clifton was great, too, but he wasn't David Bakhtiari. So that's why I went that route.
An incredibly great run blocker as well, which is still, that was a key part of success last year, all the rushing touchdowns by Jones, and not, they're all not coming off the left edge. When he gets out in space really quick, very athletic player. It's basically impossible to beat him as a speed edge rusher. It seems like his only true weakness is if you, like, power bull rush him, but he's gotten so much stronger over the last few years that it's gotten really tough to do that as well. Like, Khalil Mack has had nightmares trying to beat him. Like, he's both games last year completely shut out. Wasn't it Leonard Floyd that got the only sack off Bakhtiari in either of those games?
Yeah, we'll call that a fluke, right? But yeah, that's the only one.
And I think it was Floyd coming in on a low bull rush, low center of gravity, just caught Bakhtiari off guard and kind of right into low on Rodgers, and it was a beautiful move by Floyd, but that doesn't happen too often. So that type of stability there is great. We'll move a little further on the line. So we'll say left guard, and I don't know that it necessarily matters that much. I think not sure exactly where Mike Michalski played, but just like Sam was talking about Cal Hubbard, Mike Michalski played in that era. The early Lambeau era, that three-peat from 29 to 31, he was part of that. He was viewed as the best NFL player in the league at the time. Certainly when the Packers were able to sign him after the New York Yankees folded, so suddenly he was the rare free agent. It seems like kind of like almost like a Reggie White type of situation, like a Charles Woodson, where this, you know, elite level, maybe best in the game, becomes available to the Packers. And I noted this on the Look Pack series. Lambeau paid him the first ever guaranteed contract to be on the team. So like they wanted him that badly. And again, revolutionized the offensive line positioning, stance, technique, all those sorts of, you know, quick get off the snap and those types of movements. And then also was an excellent pass rusher, we'll say. Just penetrator into the backfield. Seems like he was quite legendary for that. So just dominated both sides of the football again, because similar to what Sam said, because of his innovations to the game, I felt the need to put him here. I guess I went here and put Bakhtiari, whereas Sam, you went with something else. You put Cal Hubbard and you went Fuzzy Thurston at guard, who was a Lombardi era guard for the Packers.
Yep, I had the 1-2 punch of Jerry Kramer and Fuzzy Thurston by adding Fuzzy Thurston to the list here. I mean, those two, along with obviously Lombardi implementing like the power sweep and the kind of play calling he had, they took what Michelski started in terms of modernizing and continuing to develop the position. I mean, they were the first two guards to really start with like the pulling action, where they'd bring the guard behind across the line and make them into essentially a fullback, a lead blocker for the running back. And Fuzzy excelled at that. And obviously it was a huge part of the team's success during the Lombardi era. And Lombardi himself called Fuzzy as good as anyone in the league at the time that he played, which is, I mean, that's high praise. It's about as high as praise can get, coming from arguably the greatest coach of all time. It's Lombardi called the power sweep his number one, his bread and butter, the play that made the Packers of that time go. And that play doesn't happen if not for Jerry Kramer and Fuzzy Thurston. So that's why Fuzzy Thurston got my selection for this spot here.
That certainly makes sense. Again, especially if you're specifically trying to build a guard tandem with Thurston and spoiled it with Jerry Kramer. Yeah, like that was shocking that Jerry Kramer was going to be on this list. But you know, if you're going to do that, that makes sense to build the line that way. And having a tackle like Hubbard, who again we suspect was one of the first to really excel at outside in space blocking, that makes actually a ton of sense to build the line that way. So Jesse, what do you think about Michelski? Did you want to add anything to the argument I made, or was there something I forgot to mention?
No, I agree with you, Kyle. That was my tip of the hat to, you know, the real old era where he was just the best football player on the field all around. So I had to put him in somewhere. This is where he went.
Okay. And moving further down the offensive line, it's actually pretty easy from here. Center, Jim Ringo, all three of us said that. I think another player that Lombardi said was probably the best at his position in the league at some point. I already mentioned Jerry Kramer. All of us had him. And of course, what I may argue is maybe the best player that the Packers had during the Lombardi era, Forrest Gregg at right tackle. I know my favorite story is I believe it was the 61 season. Jerry Kramer goes down with a broken leg mid season. And this is very telling of football then, football now, because if this situation came up today, you would never do this. But they move their right tackle, who again is kind of your best tackle at the time, inside to guard. Like if that happened now, where a guard broke his leg, they're not going to move your all-pro tackle inside, right? But again, the importance of the guards in that Lombardi offense was key to everything. So they moved Forrest Gregg to guard just in order to get the best offensive lineman possible playing there, and he excelled at that. Apparently it cost him an all-pro though, because he didn't get the all-pro nod at either position, because he basically split the season half at tackle, half at guard. But they won the title, so Gregg didn't really care, and he got tons of praise the rest of his career. And it was basically like rudimentary like team football. And apparently I read Run to Daylight this year, and Lombardi talks about it, like mentioning that specifically, like Gregg had no qualms about that at all, knowing full well that it probably would cost him an all-pro before it happened. And then, you know, when it was all said and done, he had no regrets. He won a title. So just ultimate team football. I think that's very key to it. And as a tackle, can get out in space quite athletically. I could see him and Bakhtiari as a tackle combo would be just deadly.
Chef's kiss. Can't beat that. To add to all that praise that you already heaped on him, deservingly so, he was being selected as a member of the NFL, like NFL, not just Packer, NFL all-time team by the Pro Football Hall of Fame in the mid-90s. That's a long time after he played. A lot of players came through the NFL doors to play that position, and he was still the best as selected by the Hall of Fame. That's no small praise. I mean, Lombardi himself, again, arguably the greatest coach of all time, this is as high as praise gets. He called him the finest player he ever coached. Deacon Jones, are one of the best defensive linemen of all time, called Forrest Gregg the best the best tackle of all time. I mean, this is really, really top of the line, highest of the highest level praise. And he deserved every bit of it. He was exceptional. He was an all-time player.
I got nothing to say. You guys said enough. I agree with everything you said. Yeah, it's perfect. You know, if you made a football player, that was it. You know, if you wanted a lineman, that was it. So.
All right. Well, we'll keep the answer tight there, Jesse. And we'll move to tight end now, which so you referenced this as maybe your toughest decision.
I don't know if it was the toughest. I think it was, if the Packers had the weakest spot of their ever, I think it's tight end. It's, and not saying there was bad players. I just don't think there was amazing players. So I went Paul Kaufman just because I think he was kind of was the first move tight end that Green Bay had, you know, or that we kind of showcased a little bit more. You know, he wasn't just the blocking inline tight end of that, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, mid 80s era. But I mean, he had a few seasons over 700 yards. His best season, he had 11 touchdowns in 83, you know, 3-time Pro Bowl. And we're looking at all these, you know, this is all-time Packer. We're talking about 3 Pro Bowls. That's it. But I mean, that's just one of the positions for me that I don't think was one of the Packers' greatest. But I think he is the all-time one if I had to pick one.
And I went the same direction with Paul Kaufman for similar reasons. I think that on the offensive side, this was without a doubt the weakest position group. If for no other reason than there what hasn't really been a long-term guy, especially in like the last 20, 30 years. I mean, you can argue maybe Bubba Franks, but he was passable, maybe slightly above league average for most of the years of his career. And I mean, it's been a revolving door the entire Rodgers era and most of the Favre era on top of that. And tight end wasn't really much in terms of a solidified position. That was one of the later positions to develop, like we mentioned, because of the blurred lines between even just the offensive line and what a receiver was for a lot of the history of football. So there's limited options. And then just the fact that there wasn't really many long tenured guys. My choice was Paul Kaufman for the reasons Jesse mentioned. He had a fairly long career with the Packers, playing like 7-8 years, I believe, on the team, and put up solid numbers, was a solid player, rarely got injured, especially not for extended periods of time. And he had a year where he put up over 800 yards and 11 touchdowns, 3-time Pro Bowl selection. It's not exceptional, and it's not necessarily the kind of awards you would expect to see for a guy who got selected for a franchise all-time team. But I think Paul Kaufman more than deserves the nod, especially at the position and the considering his competition throughout Packer history.
And I mean, you look at the numbers, career numbers. So my choice was actually Ron Kramer, again, Lombardi era. Maybe so. Ron Kramer made a couple of All-Pro teams. Was on obviously on a for a 2 title teams. He actually later was with the Lions when the Packers did their three-peat. So he only has 2 championships under his belt, not 5 like a lot of the other players in the Lombardi era. But yeah, so Ron Kramer, in his career, 229 catches, 16 touchdowns. You look at Paul Kaufman, 339 catches. So it's, you know, we're not doubling up, but 42 touchdowns. And that's really the one number where there's a mass disparity. And I think I would, you know, maybe lean towards what you guys were saying. So to echo earlier with Jesse, I think this was actually a pretty tough decision. I was pretty torn. Ultimately, the All Pros and Kramer being there for the titles, maybe a little too much nostalgia on my part. He did make the NFL 50th anniversary team. Hasn't made the 75th or the 100th since, but at, you know, early, I guess 50th anniversary would have been what, the 70s season? So I guess about a decade after he retired, he was still considered one of the best tight ends ever. You were right, Sam. 8 years Paul Kaufman was with the Packers. So, the one stat I would guess to give towards Kramer between 61 and 63, or sorry, 64 season, 4 straight years, he had at least 500 receiving yards. Kaufman never had that stretch throughout his career. I mean, he had an injury-riddled 82 season. He only played 9 games. If he played a full 16, he probably would have got to 500, and then that would have completed it. Then he would have had, I guess, 5 straight years of 500 or more yards. So I'm punishing him maybe a little bit too much for that one there. So I think you guys may have actually convinced me a little bit on Kaufman here. So I may that's twice. I may have to see it on the Cal Hubbard call and maybe on the Ron Kramer call, but
or we all agree we just need to find that tight end of the future to be the next great, right?
There yeah, we go. I like that.
Is it Jashiah Degara?
Well, I don't know if we're gonna go that far, but
let's shoot for the stars. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. There we go.
That would be quite interesting. I'd actually probably prefer if it was Robert Tonyan. Now we'll get to wide receiver here, and I actually so two receivers each. I actually left the second one blank because this was the decision I clearly had the most trouble with, to the point where I was actually going to let you guys make the argument for me and try and convince me here. So right out of the way, everyone should know. I mean, I think he's the greatest football player that's ever played. I think Don Hutson obviously was the when I made this. He's on this list automatically, obviously. I think his contributions go back to the look pack series from last one, but he invented the route tree. I mean, I don't know that any football players invented anything as useful to football players as that. So, and the incredible speed, honestly, going with a five man, if you don't want to play a nickel formation, you could put him on as a defensive back. He played in the 30s, 40s. So we're still playing 60 minutes. For some players, and there was at least one season where he led the league in touchdown receptions as well as interceptions. So, very clear two-way player like that. So Don Hutson to me had to be on this list. Sam also has Don Hutson. However, Jesse, you do not. You have both James Lofton and Sterling Sharp, and that's really, to be fair, I narrowed it down to those two, and I really couldn't decide between them. So. I'll let you make your case on either. Then at the end, Jesse, tell me which one you have as your number one between the two.
Okay. Well, first of all, I mean, if we didn't have to take a tight end, Don Hutson's in there. Those three are the three that go. So, and you're right, probably the greatest Packer of all time. And I didn't put him on this list. So yeah, you guys can crucify me later, but, so James Lofton, those are bad Packer teams in the 80s. I mean, we don't have to relive how bad it was, but that guy was one of the best. Like, he was a gazelle out there. I was pretty young, but just hearing stories of him and how he couldn't be covered. He was great. So, and just pairing him with Sterling Sharp, let's face it, if he didn't get hurt, I mean, yeah, I might have my green and gold goggles on, but he was as good as anybody that played during his time. He was amazing. Couldn't practice. He was the best. He couldn't be. I mean, his brother even says the wrong Sharps in the Hall of Fame. So that's pretty high standards. But Lofton and Sharp together, you don't stop that duo.
Yeah, that's very good. So if you had to pick one, who are you going with?
Well, I'm going to go Sterling. If we're just going, if I need a player, I'm going Sterling Sharp.
You're going on the talent and what he showed, especially those early years with Favre, especially.
And
that's where my argument was. I feel like if you had to say, drafting a player at the start of their career, you probably would say Sharp, right, is the better one. Who had the better, more longevious career? I don't know that that's a word, but it is now. And I mean, it played quite a lot, a lot of his career for the Packers, 9 seasons. And then, so I, I'd go for Lofton on the numbers basis, but Sterling Sharp probably on the tape. So, and I'm always a numbers guy, so I would probably default to Lofton. Sam, what's your choice? Although, if you look at your all time team, the answer's there, but why don't you tell our listeners who can't see the show sheet?
So when it came down, I selected Don Hutson as my no brainer for the reasons Kyle mentioned and the reasons we've talked about on the Look Pack, series. Go ahead and take a listen to the Lambeau era pod if you haven't already. We talk about him at length just because the impact he had on the game is unmatched. So I won't go on any more about that. And as for the James Lofton Sterling Sharp debate, I selected for the all-time team, I selected James Lofton because he had a slightly longer career with the Packers. He put up more yards and the teams were significantly worse. So overall, he had a harder role to play and a harder position to succeed in, but he still exceeded expectations. And like Jesse mentioned, dude was unguardable. I didn't get to see him play. I wish I could have, but at the same time, then I would have had to live through the bad team. So maybe that's a blessing. he was the best receiver in the league at the time, arguably, and just just consistently exceeding expectations, and 5 times passing the 1,000 yards receiving mark. That's exceptional production, especially at that time where passing wasn't nearly as prevalent as it is now. It was still transitioning into a more passing league, and a lot of like hand checking and physicality on the defense was much more prevalent than it is now. So it was much harder to put up eye popping numbers like James Lofton did. I mean, considering he's second in career receiving yardage and only barely exceeded by Donald Driver, despite Driver playing almost 70 more games over the course of his career, I think James Lofton more than deserves the nod on this. But as Jesse mentioned, if we had set up the format to be 3 wide receivers, it would have been the easiest 3 of my life, throwing James Lofton, Sterling Sharp, and Don Hutson on there, just because of Sterling Sharp, like they've already mentioned, like Jesse and Kyle have already mentioned, his talent might, I mean, he's up there with the most talented wide receivers in NFL history. It's one of the biggest and most painful what ifs to consider as a Packer fan, thinking about what could have been if not for that neck injury that made it too dangerous for him to return to football, because of just how absurdly and almost unmatched his talent was. Thinking about what could have been is kind of painful, but also at the same time, it gives us the chance to look through it with the green and gold goggles, as Jesse said, to give him the credit, and maybe more credit even than he would have deserved if his career had played out. But he's probably the most talented wide receiver in Packers history. The argument could be made for Don Hutson.
Yeah, I was about to say.
I could tell before it happened that you were going to jump in on that statement. But in my opinion, those guys are neck and neck. It's just a shame that Sterling Sharp didn't get the full career to give us the career numbers to match up with that. And I do want to throw in the nod here to Donald Driver, because, I mean, the guy is the leading receiver in terms of yardage in Packer history, and he's right up there in terms of receiving touchdowns as well, except for, you know, Don Hutson having 30 more than the second place guy. But aside from that, Donald Driver definitely deserves a mention here. He didn't make the cut on the all-time team, but he's definitely a name that we can't forget because of how much of a role he played in the Favre and early part of Rodgers' era, just being a rock-solid guy, a rock-solid target for those guys.
Jesse, I didn't ask this, but if you had to pick a fourth after, you know, Hudson, Lofton, Sharp, is it Donald Driver easily, or do you have another answer off the top of your head that you would put in that place instead?
So I love Donald Driver. Longevity does matter. It does matter. But could we ever really say he was the man, the number one? Like, that's debatable. So, I mean, I would put Jordy over him. And I just think when Nelson was on the top, which, yeah, great. You know, those offenses, you know, maybe that helped a little bit, especially those receivers that Jordy played with. Like, I just think Nelson, because he was the number one guy, you know, and for a while there, him and Roger were magical. And that's nothing against Driver, but I just think Jordy is the better receiver. But that's not taking away from Driver's longevity.
Yeah, can't argue with that. I mean, this is another one of those position groups where, I mean, we haven't even touched on a guy like Boyd Dowler or Antonio Freeman or, I mean, Max McGee, Randall Cobb. The list goes on and on. And I mean, Davante Adams still playing at a super high level. Who knows where he ends up in this conversation by the time he retires? There's a lot, like, it's a wealth, a wealth of riches for the Packers franchise in terms of wide receivers to be looking at. So limiting us to just 2, that's, ooh, man. It's really tough because there's just so many great players that played this position throughout the Packer franchise history.
Yeah, I was actually going to make that point about Adams. I wonder if by the end of his career, he can solidify himself in that top 5 franchise all time if he continues to dominate the way he is. And I was just thinking of, you know, for those maybe didn't see Sterling Sharp and not cognizant of the talent, to be honest, since Sharp has left the Packers, there have been some talented receivers come by, but I don't think anyone... I think Adams is the closest that you come to that type of talent level. Like, I don't think anyone else has really that type of speed, athleticism, route running ability, just pure explosiveness. As great as Nelson was, I don't think Nelson was what Sterling Sharp was as an athlete.
No, not even close.
So again, so Adams might be that closest that we've come to since then, I think.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, it's a good problem to have. I mean, to have that kind of wealth.
Even as we transition to running back, so all three of us had Jim Taylor as a fullback. And this was, I think, bound to happen just because of how fullbacks, especially back then, produced so much more than they do now. So production-wise, it's Jim Taylor really easily, but you know, such a great player. And I went with that fullback field of Jim Taylor, Paul Hornung, Hornung at the halfback spot, just because I think, again, if you know, building a team, thinking, okay, those two, you know that those two could play well together. How would Amon Green fare blocking for Jim Taylor is my question. But both of you went with Amon Green, the Packers' leading all-time rusher, right? I'm not making that up.
You are correct.
And his name is Green. So, yeah, so I went with Hornung, the MVP season, all pros, was part of four Packers championships, even led the league in rushing touchdowns for a season when, again, you're splitting with Taylor 50-50. That tells about how much the Packers would score on the ground, especially. So, I went with Hornung, but Jesse, you're the guest. We'll let you go first here. What about Amon Green made you choose him?
When Brett Favre started, falling off a little bit, the offense never slipped. We kind of switched into Amon Green carrying us. And the two studs you're talking about with Taylor and Hornung, Amon Green kind of did it by himself. If you look at what he did, in the 2001 to 2004, he was 1,500 all-purpose yards, 2001-year all-purpose yards. 15 touchdowns in 2003. He was carrying the load. And as good as Hornung is and stuff, his greatest season was, he's never touched 1,000 yards. Granted, he did block for Taylor and they ran a totally different kind of offense. And could Amon Green block? Probably not, but we never asked him to. That's not his game. The guy was just good. I mean, he was consistent. He played a lot before, 2005 is when he got hurt and then it kind of went downhill from there. But the talent from 2000 to 2004, he came on the scene and he was the man. He was great. So that's why he's my number one. I mean, you take out Marshall Faulk out of the league that year, he might be the guy,
That's a good point. Yeah, and Marshall Faulk did it on the ground through the air. I don't know that Green was ever that proficient as a receiver, which I guess Hornung, they kind of did ask him to receive, as a pass catcher, maybe quite a bit more than what was norm at the time, I guess. Again, everything about that offense was not normal, but that's what made it so amazing. So
setting the norms for teams moving forward.
And Green did have 500 yards in 2000 receiving and almost 600 in 2001. So they did use him as a receiver.
Yeah, that is a good point. That is a good argument there. Sam, did you want to add to that argument?
I mean, for me, choosing these two guys, especially in like the primary rushing role, Jim Taylor and Amon Green, that is. If you look at the all-time Packer rushing leaders, it's those two guys in a massive, 3,000-yard drop-off. Amon Green with 8,300, Jim Taylor with 8,200 yards. There is a 3,000-yard gap before John Brockington in third. I think that was the big decision-maker for me, just the fact that those two guys just so far and away above the rest in terms of rushing production, especially since both of those positions are primarily rushing. Though I can certainly agree with you, I have no qualms with putting Paul Hornung on there, especially when the guy is in the top 10, when he played on the same time, at the same time as the guy who's number two with over 8,200 rushing yards. Paul Hornung's still a top 10 in Packer history and third with 50 career rushing touchdowns. That's rushing touchdowns only, not even including receiving. And Amon Green barely surpassed that with 54 in his career with the Packers. So I absolutely see the argument to be made for Paul Hornung, and I have no problem with putting him on there. What put Amon Green over the top for me was just the sheer overall career production that he was able to put up. His yards per carry, 4.5 being the exact same as Jim Taylor, just the cherry on top, I think, of him being the most overall, over the course of his career, most productive rusher in Packer history.
Yeah, you certainly look at those career numbers, and it does make it for quite a difficult argument on my part, but I'm always up for the challenge. Hopefully it worked. All right, so quarterback. What do you think, folks? Do you think we're all going to be in disagreement? We're all going to have the same one?
Lynn Dickey, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we all thought Lynn Dickey. Now, I actually wondered if, Arnie Herber, just talking about him last week, he did kind of creep up into the discussion, I think. I think in my mind, it certainly solidified himself as one of the top four quarterbacks in Packers history. And if it depends on the day, I might actually call him third just because whatever. Sorry, Brett Favre, but maybe I don't appreciate Favre enough, but I think it's look at the comparison between him and the other guy that's been playing of this time. I much prefer Rodgers. I think the interception number alone is that's a big reason to kind of look in that direction. But truthfully, I think it's the way Rodgers plays, his ability to scrambling, his accuracy throughout his career, and even now, the accuracy is still there. The throw velocity, not so much post 2017 collarbone break, but the accuracy has always been there throughout his career. His ability to throw on the run accurately has really moved the quarterback position in that direction. Because now that the league is filled and being dominated by quarterbacks who play that exact same style. So I don't know how you feel about this, Jesse, but Patrick Mahomes, in my mind, is the best quarterback in the game right now. And that's exactly the way he plays, is exactly the way Rodgers played for his career.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going to go. Mahomes is the only guy that I've seen the arm talent close to what Rodgers did. I'm talking about Rodgers, in his prime, the best we've seen of Rodgers. Mahomes is close. And then there's not another quarterback in my mind that I've ever seen throw a football that's even close to what Aaron Rodgers did in his career, and that's why I have him number one. Nothing against Bart Starr. Bart Starr was a leader of legends, and that matters. That matters. But as a pure quarterback that doesn't make mistakes, isn't going to put his team in a bad situation, a la Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers is the best I've ever seen do it, arm talent wise. And the guy was always two seconds ahead of everybody. I mean, his mind and how he plays the game when he's on the top, he's the best that I've seen. So this one, I don't want to say it was a no-brainer, but it was pretty easy choice for me.
So that's two for two who say it was very clearly Aaron Rodgers. Sam, was it a tough decision for you?
It was, actually. Like you've mentioned and alluded to, there are a plethora of guys that you could make arguments for being the best quarterback in franchise history and among the best in league history just because, well, for several different reasons. You got Bart Starr with the way he revolutionized the quarterback position, Arnie Herber with the way that he started the revolutionization. I know I've used that word last week, I think in the same exact situation. Just the way that he got the ball rolling on making the quarterback position as we understand it today in terms of throwing the ball further than 5 yards down the field or just running the ball. He started that deep passing game and was really effective at it, one of the only ones in his time to be nearly as effective as he was, changing the game, and that put him in consideration for me. Bart Starr, obviously, with the team success and the leadership abilities he showed, and the dude knew how to win, and that's you can't overlook that. And he did make massive strides in being one of the first great modern, I put that in quotation marks, quarterbacks in terms of higher volume and making throws to all levels of the field. And then obviously you've got the Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers debate that I don't think will ever end, but deservingly so, because both are just fantastic players in their own right. I think what put Rodgers over the top for me, to make that clear, Rodgers is also my selection for the all-time team here. What put Rodgers over Favre in for those two for me was just the efficiency and of Aaron Rodgers, especially in the interception numbers. He's got almost 200 less, like 150 less than, 250 less than Favre in a similar number of games or a similar number of years over their careers. And similar in terms of touchdowns. The touchdown to interception ratio wasn't even close. And that's the big thing for me with Aaron Rodgers. While maintaining through the roof levels of production, positive production on the field as a passer, he rarely puts his teams in the bad spots that Favre would end up doing so with his much more carefree, just throw the ball wherever play style.
And then just the fact that I think Rodgers' peak from like 2010 to 2015 when he got in, or 2013-ish, and then like, I mean, even up through 2017 when he really injured the when he injured the collarbone on his throwing arm, that's a long stretch where he was without a doubt the most talented quarterback in the league. I mean, he was, outside of the one injury shortened season, he had over 30 touchdowns, and in a couple of those 40 touchdowns, and only one season, that 2010 season, throughout that stretch where he had double digit interceptions. I mean, that is absurd production. That's a peak higher and longer overall than I think we've seen from any quarterback ever. Mahomes could challenge that, but that remains to be seen. He's got 5 or 6 years before he can really put his stamp on having the highest and longest overall peak. Rodgers was without a doubt the best quarterback in the league for that time, and I don't think Favre can say the same, which ultimately, despite them both having only one Super Bowl to their respective names, puts Rodgers as the best quarterback in franchise history for me.
I think that those three MVP seasons might be that, like, you would really minimize it to just those three seasons when Brett Favre was the best, because, you know, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady hadn't entered the league yet. And by that point, you know, Montana had retired. You could maybe call Steve Young the best quarterback at that point, or Troy Aikman, considering all the Super Bowls that Dallas won. Dan Marino was kind of on the downslide. It was kind of like this perfect moment where he could come in and dominate before the next era started to take over. But yeah, he wasn't probably, you know, and maybe Aaron Rodgers was never the best quarterback at that time either. Maybe Tom Brady just overshadowed all that. But there's a really strong argument to make between 2010 and week 6 or 7 of 2017 that Rodgers was still the best. Because I remember that game before that Vikings game, that Cowboys game, where they win it in the last minute. And that, you know, that throw, it's not a very long throw, but just the quick velocity throw on an end zone throw to Adams, how he could, you know, perfectly time it where Adams turns around, gets it over the shoulder, goes up, makes a great catch. And, you know, it's exactly tight window throws that you love Rodgers to make, almost as much as the Hail Marys, which he might be the best Hail Mary thrower ever.
Jump back in on that Cowboys game. He picked on Jordan Lewis back-to-back plays, exact same throw, exact same route. He was like, you know what? I missed that throw. I'm going to do it again and do it perfectly this time. And he did, and they won the game. And it's just like, that just summed up Rodgers' entire career and his entire peak in my mind. Just like, you know what? I can do better than that, so I will. And then he did.
The one argument I think I'd make for Bart Starr, obviously the 5 championships, that's a really great argument to make there. But Lombardi wasn't using a headset and calling plays. Bart Starr was calling every single play. Like, that was still the expectation for quarterbacks like Johnny Unitas. And, I mean, even Terry Bradshaw still continued to do that. I think as teams in the 70s started to transition to play calling and headsets and calling a plays to a quarterback, Bart Starr was one of the few to really, and I guess play calling for the Packers then was just run the sweep, right? Run the sweep. But it was more, you know, he had all the nuances of what direction to run the sweep in, how many players are pulling and blocking. Like that, you know, is a very complex system to have to run. And he ran it perfectly without assistance in game on field. And I think that's also a testament to how well Lombardi prepared specifically Bart Starr every week. Because again, I was reading Run to Daylight, and the last chapter of Run to Daylight is this game against the Lions in 62. And, you know, giving Lombardi's account, and at one point he's saying, oh, I really hope Bart runs this exact play. And he ran that exact play, and it was, oh yeah, and oh, succeed, first down, exact, okay. Like, it's almost, it was almost like a mind meld. They were Lombardi, even as early as, and this isn't like towards the end of you know, that final three-peat in 67. This is 62, when they're still, this is only year 4. And Bart Starr had already had the playbook ingrained so much that he knew exactly when to make the best call most of the time. So I think that ability can't be overstated. So I did want to add that, where that's what I think gives Bart Starr the strong argument. Whereas Rodgers, I mean, I guess Mike McCarthy play calling isn't much, like, that's not really much of a testament, right? Like, so I guess Rodgers was always used to scrambling, and he probably would have figured out a way to do it. That type of, you know, if he was having to not get the plays called into him, I think he would have managed anyway. So all of us agreed on Aaron Rodgers, but I thought we'd spend some time talking quarterbacks. Jesse, any final points about the Rodgers or any of the quarterbacks?
No, I mean, I agree with everything you guys said, you know, like, especially with, you know, Bart Starr. He was a leader of legends. You can't take that away, but it's Aaron Rodgers for me, and it's just Aaron Rodgers.
The talent's unreplaceable.
Agreed.
All right, so one final quick hitter here. Pull out the you know, maybe call it the two-minute drive, and you have to emergency pull out your kicker here, but who's the best place kicker in Packers history?
Got to be Crosby, right? I mean, he's our leading scorer. Who's next, Chris Jackie?
The name's escaping me right now, but I would say maybe the Lombardi era kicker, who I remember, I've tracked this. I actually have this somewhere. I believe his Super Bowl II performance is the, using conventional fantasy scoring for kickers, is actually the highest scoring fantasy score for any kicker at any Super Bowl. Chandler, either the first or last name of Chandler, but the first name escaped me. So he would maybe possess the only argument, but I think Crosby really came through. He's had a, you know, he's won a Super Bowl, some clutch playoff kicks, but it was that Cowboys game in 2016, the, you know, 2.5 minutes, drains a 56-yarder, drains like it's basketball, kicks a 56-yarder, and then, you know, 2 minutes later, a 52-yarder, like, two 50-plus-yard kicks at, you know, final 2 minutes of a playoff game to take the lead both times. Like, that was extra clutch. So I think, if nothing else, those two games, Crosby really earned it. But yeah, his longevity and consistency, I mean, 2013 is really the only bad season he's had, right? Like, I remember that year there was talk, oh, are they gonna replace him? And thankfully the Packers actually kept the faith in him, and I don't know that many other kickers are making both of those clutch 50-yard field goals. And his regular season field goal average isn't as good as his playoff field goal average, so like that's also a really good sign. Like, come playoff time, Crosby is even better. What does he miss, like two field goals in his whole career in the playoffs?
Yep. Yeah, the guy you're talking about was Don Chandler. I'm cheating now. I'm looking it up.
Thank you. I was honestly too lazy to do it, so get the guest to do it. Perfect. Thanks.
Yeah, he only played for the Packers for two seasons, though, and he was 57% field goal percentage. So
luckily, he was much better in the Super Bowl because, again, highest scoring fantasy Super Bowl ever. But yeah, not okay. So there you go. It's Crosby, clearly.
I mean, unless we want to cheat and say, put in Paul Hornung here.
There you go.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, we can't overlook the impact he had as a place kicker at the time. But I mean, if we're going conventional, and Paul Hornung definitely made most of his impact as a receiver / rusher. So
I think Don Hutson was a place kicker too, on top of being, you know, I'm pretty sure he like regularly led the league in scoring because of all the receiving touchdowns, which was, again,
guy do,
yeah, threw the ball to himself.
Yeah, basically. So yeah, sorry Jerry Rice, you're not the greatest receiver of all time. They laugh like that, like they laugh like they don't think I'm serious.
Oh, I know you are. I like it.
Yeah.
That's two episodes in a row. I might just have to keep saying it every single episode. Sorry, listeners. It's going to get annoying. But thank you, listeners, for listening to this Packers all-time team episode. And thank you, Jesse, for joining us. Anything you want to plug?
No, I appreciate you guys having me on, and I look forward to doing it again.
Awesome. So, again, check out on Full Press Coverage right now. Jesse's released 5 key matchup articles, expecting at least one more, maybe more, who knows, how ambitious Jesse gets, but definitely keep looking for those. They've been excellent reads so far. What was the latest one? Most recent one, I guess, was the wasn't the Janoris Jenkins ones. You did something after that. Oh yeah, Rashawn Gary.
Yep, Gary and Andre Dillard.
Yeah, two second year players looking to make a step up this year. So yeah, definitely check out how he expects that matchup to go, as well as the others. And of course, everything Full Press Coverage related at FPC_coverage on Twitter, specifically for the Packers at FPC_Packers. You could follow the three of us. Jesse is at Hall_J Hall.
Yes.
Okay, good. I got it right. Sorry, Sam. I got his much easier than yours for some reason. Although Sam's at S_Toma, Thoma 97. So yeah, I've got that one down now. Almost like a Bart Starr run offense.
There you go.
Okay, I'm not Bart Starr. Maybe I'm the star of the show, who knows? But no, it's really my great co-host and my great guest today, Jesse. You could follow me at Senra Says, new Twitter handle for those. Hopefully you can handle it. And yeah, I've made that joke on the Fantasy Pod as well. sorry if you can't handle either joke or any of this, but again, Jesse, appreciate it. Sam, as always, love co-hosting with you here on the Full Press Packers Pod.